Thank you and good morning. Marshall, do you want to call our second case?
Yes, calling case A220610 in the matter of the petition of Herman H. Backus and Chandra D. Backus for an easement by necessity.
Great. And as mentioned, respondent did not file a brief in this matter. And so we just have argument here by appellant. And so go ahead, Mr. Reichert, when you're ready, just introduce yourself and you have 15 minutes. And since, and you don't probably get your 5 minutes for rebuttal unless you want to rebut yourself, which I sincerely doubt. All right, go, please proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is James A. Reichert, and I represent the petitioners here, Herman and Chandra Backus, in their request or their petition for an easement by necessity. I've outlined all of these things in my brief, and so I'm not going to belabor them, but I'm going to just mention that my clients applied for a lot split in August of 1997 because they were preparing to sell their home and move to Illinois. And they had a homestead on the front half of the lot, and they had raw acreage behind them. And that lot split was approved by the city of Coon Rapids. They hired a surveyor to delineate the two lots. And at that point, they had approved, the city of Coon Rapids had approved the lot split. My clients then sold their home in October of 1998. And for some reason that has never really been fleshed out here, Edina Realty failed to record the easement after closing. My clients moved out of state and they were not aware of that problem until about 2002 when they had an offer to buy the lot, which they were interested in accepting. And then the developer backed out because he determined there was no access. After that time, not in the record, but there were efforts to try to fix this problem before the statute ran out against Edina Realty. Including visiting with the city of Coon Rapids to see if there was access through an outlot on the other end of the tract B that my clients reserved for themselves.
Mr. Reichert, if I could just interrupt, you acknowledge that the Backuses had actual notice in 2002 that no easement existed and that it hadn't been recorded?
Yes, I do. Okay, and I know where Your Honor is probably going with that. That is the issue of latches, which I address later on, but I'll address it right here. It doesn't, in my view of the situation, necessity is necessity. And latches, whether this was discovered 1 year or 20 years later, or discovered by subsequent owners of that lot, this lack of access is not going to be denied based on latches, because necessity still trumps the entire situation. Absent access to this property, it is valueless. And that's a forfeiture of my client's interests. And as a result of that, that forfeiture deprives them of their property here because they can't use it. They can't sell it. They can't access it legally. They cannot access it.
Mr. Reichert, that argument, although sounds persuasive, it seems to leave the current owner of parcel A, out on a limb. I mean, that person bought the property, assuming that they bought what they got, and that was something without an easement. So to say that necessity trumps everything and you can always come in to get access would adversely affect the parcel A owner.
Agreed, Your Honor. It does affect the parcel A owner. The facts now are a little different because there is a new purchaser who is aware of this litigation and is aware of this need for an access by my clients, et cetera. So the present fee owner is aware of all of this.
Right. But at the time this owner bought the property, was not aware of it, correct? I mean, because I thought that the record reflected the person said that they would not have paid what they paid for it had they known this and so forth.
I think you're referring to the purchaser, Hilden, who was the owner at the time the petition was filed. There was the original owner who did expect that there would be an easement. I think that's the Walkers were the first owners. So they had an expectation of it because that was part of the entire transaction. But by the time the lack of easement was discovered, Walkers had sold to Tao. I think it's T-A-O.
Right.
And then at that point, there was it was not possible to negotiate with the Taos.
And then to Hilden.
And then to Hilden. Yes, that's correct. That's my understanding of the sequence of the owners here. And now to the present owner, whose name escapes me this morning, but there is another owner. But my point is, when it comes to asking for an easement by necessity, the issue has to do with access to the property. And it may be unfortunate that someone else has to yield to the need for access to the property. And that's what you're addressing, Your Honor, is the fact that some other owner might have to yield to this issue of this easement. And yes, it may be unfortunate, but it's just as unfortunate for my client not to have access to property and to have this property be basically valueless without any kind of an easement here.
Are there other ways that the Bacchuses could get access to the property, though? I mean, could they negotiate with the owner of another surrounding property and actually pay for an easement or driveway?
My understanding, Your Honor, is that was attempted by Edina Title back in the early 2000s. My understanding also is that the city of Coon Rapids was approached because there's an outlot at the end of Tract B that is owned by the city of Coon Rapids. The problem is that the land is not buildable, and because this is a drainage area on the outlot for the city of Coon Rapids, it was not possible to get access through that outlot that the city of Coon Rapids owned. And other owners of property along there apparently declined to discuss the matter.
So if we were to side with your client, the current property owner, an innocent property owner, would be giving up her property rights for nothing, right? I mean, even with condemnation, you're required to provide fair market value.
Yes, I agree, Your Honor. That is the posture of things.
Yeah.
Although, and I would reiterate for the court that the present owner, not Hilden, but someone new, is aware of this easement request. And
but
so I assume.
I just have a question. I didn't see any owner past Hilden. Is that reflected in our record?
Boy, Your Honor, it should be, because what happened in this matter is that originally, the title company was defending Hilden in this matter. But when Hilden sold the property, the title company withdrew, and the new owner's counsel was going to pursue defense of this appeal. What happened, I don't know.
Okay.
Where did
we end? Because we must look at the record that's established before us. I want to be very cautious about considering extra record material or evidence. So,
right. And I understand that, Your Honor. I think what is in the record is the fact that there was a change of counsel and a change of respondent. And beyond that, I don't think the record explains it.
Okay.
I want to ask you a really fundamental question here. So the Bacchuses were seeking an equitable remedy, and the defense of latches was raised. That's also an equitable defense. This case has come to us from a summary judgment stance. What the heck is our standard of review here? Are we reviewing de novo just as we would in any other summary judgment matter? Or does the fact that we're dealing with these two equitable doctrines somehow change our standard of review? In other words, do we do something other than look at things de novo given the equitable doctrines?
Well, I think that there isn't a different standard. I believe that those two equitable matters need to be reconciled, but I think that the trial court partially reconciled them. Magnuson is the leading case, and there are other cases cited by that in my brief, and I won't belabor you with those. But there, the whole discussion always centers around necessity, necessity, necessity. And so these other things like intent and use and separation of title are all illustrative of what was going on. But the actual outcome determinative, according to Magnuson, is necessity. And so I don't know how a trial court might reconcile necessity with latches. Here, the court did not balance those two things. The court simply said that because there was no use, there was no intent then to preserve the easement area. And that's not what the case law says. The case law does not require use. In fact, the case law discusses the fact that there can be little or no use and that intent to preserve the easement is the outcome determinative factor.
Now, well, I think what the district court was really focused on was the fact that the Backuses knew in 2002 that the easement had not been created. And, you know, according to the record before us, at least, and before the district court, took no action, until now.
And I would agree that that's not ideal, Your Honor, but it is the way it played out here. And you mentioned.
So why doesn't that defeat intent? I mean, evidence of intent.
To maintain
an easement. They knew there wasn't one since 2002. We've now got 20 years that have passed. That, why is that not conclusive evidence? Or at least...
Not
a genuine issue of material fact, I guess. I don't know.
Right. I don't think it is, because it doesn't change the situation. The situation is still that the land is landlocked. The parcel is landlocked. And so 1 year, 10 years, 20 years doesn't change the fact that you can't get to this parcel. So this parcel has no economic value. And so whether there were latches on my client's part or whether they sold to some third party and that party brought this petition, I don't think it changes the need for the easement. And so if the trial court were to say that it's a taking of the present fee owner's property to put an easement over it, well, then I think the trial court had before it an appraisal. The trial court can determine what the value might be of that easement as a burden on the fee owner. Those issues, of course, weren't litigated. They weren't raised in the pleadings.
Is that within the district court's authority, though, to say, okay, yeah, we can't have a landlocked parcel and your client needs to pay these people based on the evidence, whatever the dollar amount is? I mean, where does the court get authority to do that? Because it doesn't come within it. That would be prohibited under the condemnation laws, statutes of this state.
It seems to me that this would be an equitable remedy that the fee owner could raise with the court in terms of proceeding here and demonstrating that that burden, while they may be required to sustain it, they may be required to bear that burden, that they shouldn't bear it for free. And so I think the respondent can raise that issue, can ask the court for compensation on the trial court level. They didn't do that here. They didn't look at it from that angle.
And your client hasn't offered that.
Well, I don't want to get into those offers, Your Honor.
No. Let's not. Because this is all outside the record. So let's not. But I mean, it's not asserted in your court documents.
No.
That's what I meant. Not any outside offers. Okay. Thank you.
Correct. I think I've pretty much covered this, Your Honors. I think your questions show that you have a good understanding of the issues in front of you. I'm going to just continue to pound the table over necessity here, because there is no access. And what are we going to do with this property and these owners if they can't access their property? Now they've essentially had a forfeiture worked against them simply because no one will give them an easement by necessity. And I think that here it's clear the court found that it was necessary. The court found it was necessary.
But the district court also said that an implied easement is an equitable doctrine. And I assume you agree with that, Mr. Reichert.
I do. Yes.
And then took the next step and said these affirmative defenses of latches and unclean hands are also equitable. And so that was then what led to that analysis. What is flawed in the court's analysis in that respect?
The court got all focused on use here. And
I have to just stop you for a minute because I know you're running short on time. As Judge Gaeta said, I mean, I think the court was very focused on that 16-year period of time from 2002 to 2018 in which nothing was done, although they knew that the easement was not recorded. So I don't know that it was use. It was really with respect to latches, looking at that period of time where no action was taken.
Well, I disagree with you, Your Honor. I felt that the court was deciding this case on intent to reserve an easement and the use of it. And they were saying, well, you never used this easement, which is correct. We never used it. We sold the property on the same day that the easement was supposed to be recorded. It wasn't. But my clients thereafter are not going to use that area either as a civil trespass or a criminal trespass. They're not going to use it. And so as a practical matter, they didn't access that property. And so that was where I found the trial court to be focused. They were focused on use, not anything else. That's where I found the court to be wrong.
Judge Siegel, Mr. Reichert's time is up, but may I ask one additional question, please?
Yes, please go ahead.
Okay. Just very quickly, I just want to be clear about one of the arguments you're making. Well, I think it's your whole argument. You said necessity should always trump latches or anything else. And I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying, which I think is that if there is a need for an easement, then regardless of what defenses might exist, the district court has an obligation to give one. Is that what you're saying?
That's my reading of Magnuson.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much, Mr. Reichert. The case is now submitted and we will issue our decision within the statutory time period. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Happy holidays.
You too.